Hello, everybody. This is the coach, Chris Ortiz, asking y'all for a quick favor. If you could, hit www.coachortiz.com. Give my website a look-see. Check it out. We have all of our released podcast episodes on there. And then I also have my children's books that I've been releasing as of late. Dear Mama is the first one of four that's set to come out this year. So if you could, give my website a look, www.coachortiz.com. And just let me know what you think. Thanks for the support. Take care and be that someone. Hello, everybody. This is the coach, Chris Ortiz, at the Be Someone podcast. And this week's guest is Mike Corley, head coach at Heritage Muay Thai, and also the president of the United States Muay Thai Federation. Mike has trained some of the biggest and brightest stars in all of combat sports and currently has a couple of world champions underneath his belt. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of the Be Someone podcast. Take care and have a blessed day, everybody. Hey, guys, this is Chris Ortiz at the Be Someone podcast. And today we're here with Mike Corley, head coach of Heritage Muay Thai and president of the United States Muay Thai Federation. What's going on, Big Mike?
What's up, man?
It's been a while, man. I used to train under you a long time ago. And, man, I still remember those days, man. Back when you were at Kingwood Kuksuwan.
Yeah, I thought it was at the Huntsville School of Karate.
It may have been that, too. I did live in Huntsville for like 7-8 years. Well, let's hop into it, man. Let's talk about, Mike Corley, the early years. You know, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Spring, Texas.
Good Lord, man. Were you a Spring Lion?
Yep. Spring High, class of 03.
All right, then, man. That's right down the way from where I live, man. Let me ask you this. What were your folks like? What were the Mr. and Mrs. Corley like?
My mom worked for the airlines, and my dad was a officer with HPD for a little over 30 years. And I learned a lot about working hard from him because he had multiple extra jobs. So he'd work for the city, and then he'd also have neighborhood gigs, all different types of stuff where he was working on. So yeah, he was always working.
Oh yeah, like police officers make a lot of extra money doing a bunch of side gigs. I know, like, my brother's an officer, and he helps people transport, you know, things, and he serves as security at other spots. Yeah. And there's not a lack of jobs for police officers. So continuing on about your father, because you really did kind of lean into that. What are some other aspects that you picked up from your father?
Like, no excuses, just get the job done type of guy, you know. It's the world's hard, you know, and he's not one to sugarcoat things and everything, kind of just straight shoot and tell me like it is, and it's helped out.
All right, shoot. Well, I mean, it obviously helped. I mean, you're in one of the most brutal combat sports known to man, so he definitely did a little right there. Continuing on with that, like, what are some things that interested you as a kid? Because, you know, the sport of Muay Thai is not something, I guess, kids pick up early on in their life.
Get even exposed to. Yeah, I don't even know what it is. I played soccer, baseball, basketball, football all growing up, and then I think it narrowed down to track and baseball and basketball in high school up until, I believe, my junior year, like somewhere around there, like my sophomore going to junior, don't remember exactly. And then I got introduced to boxing, and from there that was all she wrote with all those other sports.
That's interesting, though, that you have a background in multiple sports, because you speak to, I guess, most people that are up and up on the subject, and they say that, you know, playing multiple sports growing up, you know, is definitely the way to go until a kid is free to decide. Let me ask you this, you know, being a coach, were you able to decide for yourself, or, you know, did your father step in and say, hey, man, you're going to box, damn it?
Oh, no, it was me. It was me. And you know that it's as weird as that when I was kind of feeling away from baseball and basketball at the time, because both the coaching on both sides were kind of leaning me wanting to do one or the other, and I was not really wanting to do that. And just, like, you know, politics and just, you know, the I just wasn't feeling it anymore. When I got introduced to the boxing gym, it just sparked something that I was like, I'm not doing this other stuff anymore. And I think it's good to do multiple sports. It's really good, but I think it'll come to you. It'll hit you where you want to choose one.
Interesting. And I'm going to make this point just on the side. If y'all didn't notice what Mike said, he said that, you know, it was the politics and it was the adults stepping in and trying to make decisions for him, which kind of pushed him away from the sport, you know. So y'all adults that are listening, you know, y'all quit trying to make decisions for y'all's kids, you know. Let them play what they want to play, and they're probably going to end up, you know, being the best at what they want to do, you know, whenever it is what they want to do, not what you want to do.
Right.
Can't be living vicariously through your kids. Even though we're all a little bit guilty, man. I'm a little guilty too sometimes. All right, so what drew you to boxing initially?
My dad and a couple of his friends, they used to have the big fights on at his house, and he used to be a professional boxer. He was from New York and moved down to Houston. He was a cop here in Houston, and I'd watch the fights, and he just asked me one day, what do you think about it? Have you ever done anything? And we used to, like, mess around, you know, in high school and stuff like that, and never anything serious. And I was like, yeah, I'd be interested to try it out. And he took me first to the police gym a couple times to teach me a couple basic stuff. And I kind of tagged him a little bit. I probably shouldn't have. Nice beating on me after that, but it was cool though. It was cool. But then he said, "I think you're ready. We're gonna take you down to the real gym." So then he took me to Savannah's Boxing Club, and I, like, the first time I was there, just the environment, the feel of the gym, the sound, the smell, the everything. I was just like, "Man, this is what I want to do."
Do you remember his name?
Oh yeah, his name is Ed Hattrick. He's a friend of my dad's. He just retired from the HPD as well. And, yeah, he was a former professional boxer.
Yeah, look what you started at. Good Lord. All right. So you said you were hooked by the smell, by the environment, by the people. Who were some of, like, your early coaches and early teammates at that time?
When I first started, there was a kind of walking the – you're in the gym and there's, like, a bunch of – there's, like, groups of, like, ages. So there's, like, these tiny kids, and they had a couple coaches. And there was me as a, you know, teenager, and young adults that were with a couple coaches. And there was a coach. He still coaches here in Houston. Actually, like, we were probably split apart for, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And then I saw him again. His name was Gary Pena. And he works with, like, Justin Ledette with the UFC now. And back then, I worked with him for like a year and a half, 2 years, I think. We went from Savannah's to Prince's Boxing Club, and then we went back to Savannah's. And by that time, I was done with high school, and I went to college. And then throughout that time in high school, I also met Eve Edwards, who is a mixed martial arts pioneer. And he introduced me to all the different – I just knew boxing, and he – introduced me to, you know, mixed martial arts of you know, grappling and Muay Thai. And when he showed me this, like, I was like, he's always like, you're ready to do an MMA fight. I was like, no, what's this Muay Thai stuff? I want to do that.
All right, man, that's interesting, man. You got one of the pioneers, especially like the guy that brought it to the Conroe Woodlands area, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
All right, we're gonna transition to this. How did you find yourself in Muay Thai?
Well, yeah, I was still doing amateur boxing, competing in high school. And then when I met Eve, I started doing some, like, smoker, which people don't know what that is, like, in-gym events, Muay Thai events in Dallas that he put me in touch with Saxon Janjira, who's another, you know, a legend for the United States. A lot of people have come under him. And he used to have these events, and I got to go do those. And just doing all this different stuff, I was drawn to the stand-up of martial arts, where you could basically do anything, punch, kick, elbow, knee. And I was like, man, I like this better than boxing. And I was just kind of bouncing from back and forth between those through college, because there wasn't a lot of opportunity, because the sport's not so big at that time here in the U.S. So I was getting more amateur boxing fights than I was Muay Thai fights, but I had something in me that really liked Muay Thai more, you know?
Yeah, man, shoot. You get to use six more limbs too, yeah, right?
That's right.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about your career. When did you decide, you know, to start fighting and saying, like, hey, I'm going to start trying to make a living off of this in one capacity or another?
No, never made a living, but I it was something I wanted to see how far I wanted to go with it. I think it was I had made the USA team in
sorry, man.
I've made the USA team, I think, in 2008, yeah. And then I kind of got humbled. I did okay. I did good, but I didn't know the levels of the game. So I thought I was good nationally, but on the world scale, I had a lot to learn. So right after that, I went to Thailand, trained a little bit, came back, did the 2009 USA team. And it was kind of at that point, I did better again. And after that, we went and did a pro fight. I stuck around in Thailand a little bit after the championships, did a fight. And it was that pro fight that I knew I needed to be there and stay there. And that was kind of like where I wanted to, you know, I adjusted things where I wanted to come back and live in Thailand and see how far I could go. Knowing that there's no money in this sport, they're not going to get your name out there. It was just something that I wanted to, for me personally, see how far I could go.
All right, well, speaking of Thailand, what are some of the, like, the more famous venues that you got to step foot inside of and go to war?
I got to fight at the old Lumpini Stadium. That was an experience like none other. All the legends have fought there.
What would be a comparison to that stadium here in the States as far as, like, history goes?
Oh, maybe, like, Madison Square Garden, I guess, or maybe, like...
Yankee Stadium.
That would be a better one. Like
Fenway.
Yeah. Maybe like where the Cubs play.
Oh, Wrigley.
Yeah, Wrigley. Yeah.
It is old school.
Yeah, old. Like tin roof, like my gym here. I got to beat one of the... me and Kevin Ross, the only Americans to win in the Toyota Cup in Thailand. I got to participate in that. Got to do a lot of cool stuff in Thailand. No world champion or big time, but I got to do some pretty cool stuff.
But you got to hop on the roller coaster and take the ride, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right.
What were the living conditions like over there? Because I've seen tapes and videos, but I guess...
I wasn't in such a bad place. I didn't have like a mattress. I would say I had like a box spring thing, but I went to like Tesco Lotus, which is like kind of like a Walmart over there, and I got like this like 1-inch pad thing I laid over my bed, and I wanted to live a little bit, you know, rougher, make me like a little more hungrier for stuff. But it was just a very like an efficiency, like a little small room was my room. And then the students that came there, I worked at Fairtex and I was like the manager of a Muay Thai camp while I was there. And the campers that come generally four to a room, so like some had bunk beds and then some would have like two small beds, and they would all share a bathroom. So it's kind of like a military type thing, or like a college dorm all crammed in there. And wake up in the morning and train and take a nap, come back in the afternoon and train.
Good Lord. How does training over there differ from over here? Or is it starting to...
No, it's just because over there it's a lifestyle and it's their job. It's everything. So a lot of them are going to their 9-to-5 or they're not going to school full time. Whereas here, you know, most of the people that practice Muay Thai have jobs and they're doing it usually after work in the evenings. And some of them do two-a-days. They might do their cardio in the morning and everything. But it's like over there, it's a full-on, you know, session.
Live, morning, eat, breathe.
Yeah, morning and afternoon. And if you don't, your competition is, so.
All right, well, I know that you fought like a who's who in the Muay Thai world. What are some of your more, like, memorable scraps, you know, win or lose? You know, just some fights you're like, God damn, man, that was a good fight.
I would say the Lumpini one, because I really took a lot of punishment. I had, like, my face opened up over my eye. No, I'm sorry, in between my eyes and then up on my forehead. I got my leg really hacked up, but I never went down, and I hung really tough in the fight. It was a five-round, three-minute fight, and it was very tough. And I would say another one would be, and that the guy that I fought in that was Chachai Sorkanasorn. He was a really good fighter. And then I would say a couple tournaments, like one time in Hong Kong, I fought a German champion and did really well. And then in Pattaya in Thailand, I fought a English champion. I did really well, but I'd always give everything I got in that first fight of the tournament. And then the second fight, I would be like, I wasn't a very evasive fighter, so I was taking damage when I got those victories. So the next fight in those tournaments, I'd always lose, man. But I always, you know, I'm good for the first one. So yeah, I think I was proud of those moments the most. Those were some good fights.
Well, man, just the fact that it's tournament style, and you know, you got to suit back up, you know, almost immediately.
Yeah. So that's, can I please make that point on there? So when some of y'all look up some of these YouTube videos and like, Coach, I saw a video, you didn't do so good. I'm like, did you know I fought like 45 minutes before that? Like, my ribs were busted. My head, like, man, there's a couple videos where I like get my leg hacked up, and then on one of them, my body, like my ribs are really messed up, and the guy knew it. He was in the dressing room right next to me, and he came out there, and first thing he did was throw a teep to my body, threw a body punch, and I was gone, you know? But, you know, some of that stuff.
Yeah, all you see what's on the video,
like,
right?
It's like, man, Coach, what happened there? And I was like, I fought earlier that night. I promise I won.
Man, hey, y'all better be listening, man. All right, what we're going to do too now is we're going to kind of transition into coaching, because I know that you know, you're out the fight game and you've been coaching for quite a while. In fact, like my first experience meeting you was at LA Boxing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's a long-ass time ago.
Yeah.
You know, and I know you've gone to Gracie Baja the Woodlands and have coached there. You've coached at Team Took, Travis's school. Mm-hmm. You've been at Houston Muay Thai. Did I miss any spots?
that might cover it. Yeah, I've trained a lot of schools here in Houston, I guess.
Well, what's been the biggest adjustment that you've had to make from going from like being a competitor to now being a coach and overseeing everything?
It's actually been really good, because I've kind of experienced just about everything. I've made a lot of crazy decisions, and now I've had a lot of opportunities for my fighters to do this and do that, from promoters and, you know, stuff like that. And I know better the route to take from my own personal experience. I know what they're trying to do and stuff like that. So it's been good like that. As far as like coaching, again, it goes back to me as a competitor. I always tell people, I said, you know, you see how hard we're working here. That's not even hard as what I was doing. And I didn't become a world champion, so you got to work harder than that. You know what I mean? So it's like, I kind of relate to them. I can see it and talk to them because I did it, and you know, that's it.
Oh yeah. Well, let me ask you this then: does coaching give you the same satisfaction as fighting did?
More so.
Really? How?
Just because it's like your product, like you developed it and you're seeing it. And And the best thing is when they do better than me, you know, they're doing all these things. Like, I was not a evasive fighter, and when I see my fighters, you know, moving and defending well, I'm like, wow, it's awesome. I never could do that. And you know, just different, you know, you're just kind of like seeing your work play out, you know. It's pretty fulfilling.
All right, well, let's say that someone's thinking about, you know, getting into Muay Thai, and they, you know, got that competitive bug. You know, maybe they're transitioning from another sport. They're coming out of high school. You know, their options are limited as far as being in the NFL or the NBA. What qualities does one need to be successful in Muay Thai?
Ooh, yeah. It's mental. Because you might have to break down, like, everything from scratch with some people. I've had guys that are Division One football players that came, and we couldn't get them to kick properly for a month, you know, just not even stepping correct and this, that. And it's crazy, but you got to be mentally strong. You got to do the homework. You're going to have to approach it just like you approached day one football, you know, or whatever sport you played. It's very tough, but it's also very fulfilling, because there's something about combative sports that it's that one-on-one with a man, you know, it's like primitive, you know, it's me versus you, and it's for this food over here, you know what I mean? Like, that's
exactly,
there's something about that I think that combative sports provides that no other sport can. So I think it has a more fulfilling thing. Sound like a crazy person.
All right. Who are currently some of your prize pupils, and who else looks to be on the rise?
Rebecca Irwin, she's won the IFMA World Championships 3 times in a row.
So you got a world champion underneath your tutelage at the moment?
Yes. Good. Yes. Lord. And she's won world championship 3 times, and then as a pro she won a Thailand professional title over there. She's now signed to Glory. It's like the biggest kickboxing organization. She's doing well in there. Still, you know, on the come up in there.
How old is the kid?
19.
Good Lord. And so then, she's been a world champion at the age of 19, and she's just scratching the surface, huh?
Yeah, imagine. Yeah. And then I've had some other people. I've had six people on the USA team represent the USA. I had someone win the Pan American. Jacob Rodriguez won the Pan American gold medal. He also fought in Glory, which is that, you know, big kickboxing organization, which was cool. He got to fight in Madison Square Garden, and he won. And it, funny enough, it was Eve Edwards, my first martial arts instructor, was in the crowd. So that's kind of cool. Like,
it's full circle.
Full circle. that was a real cool experience. I got a lot of them. I have, Jeremy Milbourne, Oliver Jimenez. Heck, Becca's 2 sisters have won. All those people I just named are all North American champions. They've won tournaments in the open class as amateurs. Yeah, we got a lot of them. It's been pretty cool. With this whole thing right now, hopefully, we get some competition by the end of the year, I hope.
I think we're all, you know, itching and ready to get out and compete in some capacity or another.
Yeah.
All right, let's switch gears a little bit, because, I noticed that the last time we spoke, you know, you were at Houston Muay Thai, and this is a different location. This is actually Heritage Muay Thai. Tell me a little bit about your spot and what makes it different.
I co-founded Houston Muay Thai with Bob Perez, and we kind of outgrew our spot real quick at within Lou's gym, Lou Savarese's gym. And we, I was out searching around for the next spot, because we outgrew our sublease there at his gym. And he's like, "Why don't we all just combine?" I said, "Yeah, let's do that." And then we combined, and it was great, but at the same time, downtown was getting busier. The Rockets were getting better. So, like, downtown was getting more busy during those times, and, like, it seemed to be a little bit of a problem. I was kind of wanting to get out of that point, and it was no offense to any of them. It was just I kind of wanted to get out of all of that element, but also wanted to kind of do my own thing where it was just focused on more so Muay Thai than all the other stuff. So when I came here, it's not too far, about 8 miles or so, I think, from downtown. And there was a big thing. I was trying to think of a name, that renaming, that's a big thing, And one of the things I think with Muay Thai is that it's really important is the heritage, like where you came from, who passed it on to you. And that's what I'm trying to do is pass on my teachings to my students now, where they're proud of their heritage, right? I'm proud of where I came from and who I learned from. And I think it's a kind of a lost thing in Muay Thai, particularly the sport I'm in, where a lot of people don't have someone they look to, and they're kind of looking at YouTube and Instagram instead of having a lineage and heritage. All right. You know what I mean?
Nice little plug there.
There you go.
All right. Well, we spoke earlier about all your different champions, and that can be, you know, quite intimidating to, like, say, the average customer, the average Joe, someone that works in an office, you know, 8 hours a day, and they're looking to, you know, do a little something.
Like, right.
For those folks, why step into heritage and give Muay Thai kickboxing a shot?
Oh, man, you're going to get fit. You're going to have a community of, you know, everyone here is a good person here. And like I said earlier, it's just something about a sport where you can kind of come in and you can punch and kick and get out your day's frustrations on a bag, or, you know, you start advancing in the classes, you might, you know, punch and kick your sparring partner. And there's something more fulfilling than, no offense, than like going to Zumba or going to a spin class. And no offense to those things, you know, everybody, anything that you can do to get fit and, you know, help you mentally, physically, I'm all for it. But there's something more fulfilling than all doing all these things. You're going to get fit. You're going to have community. And the other thing is, you're going to have self-defense. You know, you're learning something that's practical, that if something were to happen, God forbid, out in the street, you know, you might be able to handle yourself pretty well, you know?
Yeah, it's nice to be able to walk around, you know, confident, and know that you're, that you're always going to be, in the worst case scenario, you're going to be all right.
Yeah.
You may not win, you know, maybe take an L or whatnot, but you're going to be all right. You're going to survive and live to fight another day.
Yeah, you got that push kick off at Whole Foods. And
hey, Whole Foods is our sponsor.
They weren't social distancing. You had to get them out the way.
What unique challenges does being a business owner present? Because I know, like, right now we're in some real strange times, you know, and it's really taking an effect on gyms in particular.
Oh, yeah. We were one of the last things, I think, to open, and then, you know, I feel it in the community. All of my, some of my best friends are gym owners, same as me, Muay Thai gym owners across the U.S. And, you know, we're all on the phone with each other all the time, like, hey, we're opening and we're doing this. And some of them are still closed and they don't have a date to open, you know, so it's a real big struggle. But just in general, it's hard to just even get the word out on the sport. The sport in 2016 was provisionally recognized as an Olympic sport, and yet people still think it's an alcoholic drink, a Mai Tai. And people think it, they don't know what it is, you know. So it's, you know, still a challenge of getting that out there and educating the masses on what it is.
All right. So as a business owner, what is this? What's your next move? How do you plan on spurring growth post, you know, COVID-19? I know you got to be thinking and game planning.
Oh, yeah. I've been just, you know, cleaning up the gym as always. I see a lot of people posting these videos about all these measures they're taking to clean the gym. We've always been doing, like, you know, fog treatments and antimicrobial, all this different stuff. But also, just on top of just cleaning and, you know, letting people know it's a safe place to come to, I've just been upgrading everything to where a lot of people that do go to Muay Thai gyms or Jiu-Jitsu gyms, they also have a membership at like a 24 or LA Fitness or a Lifetime, and they got a membership here and a membership there. I wanted to have all of that on site. So, like, I ended up you know, redoing the men's locker room and changed it into a weight room. I you know, changed I rearranged the gym so that I could put in some fitness equipment, like a stair climber, treadmill, everything. So I basically want it to be like a one-stop shop for everyone, for all ages, youth and adults, where they don't got to go here, there, because I think that's what a lot of families are battling, is that they got people doing all these different things when they can just have it all right here. So that's kind of one of the adjustments I'm doing with everything.
Hey, as a family man, I could tell you that what you just said right there is on point. Like, we overcommit our kids, or we overcommit ourselves, we overschedule, you know, ourselves, and we spread ourselves very thin. So I think it's a wise business move on your behalf to put everything right here so that, you know, you're not in 10 different spots.
Yeah, thank you.
So, hey, well done. We're going to talk about you a little bit as the president of the United States Muay Thai Federation. Did I say that right?
Yep.
Try not to screw that up.
Yep.
How long have you been the head of the organization, and how did you obtain it?
It's been now about 4 years. I was a board member, and I remember I think I was like a last-minute coach for the 2016 team. So I was a USA coach in 2016, and I was in Sweden, and I just saw that there was the possibility of it getting provisionally recognized by the International Olympic Committee and all the different steps that the sport needed to take to get on that path of getting fully recognized. And I just knew where we were in the U.S. at that time, and we had a lot of challenges that we faced with that. And I was like, you know, there's always those people like, we should do this, we should do that. And I was like, man, I got to do this. I'm going to do it. So it was that, it was the time to, for an election, I ran and I got it.
And what things do you do and see as head of that organization? Like, what does your job title entail?
So I'm a president of USA Muay Thai, vice president of the Pan American Muay Thai, and then I'm on the board of the International Federation of Muay Thai Associations. With just the U.S., I oversee, you know, the board and all the different commissions we have. We have a referee and judge commission that, you know, oversee, you know, officiating and everything. You know, look at the athletes commission, the selection commission, how the teams are selected. We look at, we also have stuff for, we have a youth program, Sport Is Your Gang, for at-risk kids in like L.A. and New York.
We have interesting.
All, yeah, we have all kinds of
How's
stuff.
How's that going? That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it's cool. We actually had a meeting about it today where some of them, they've been in the program where it was just for them to, you know, get away from trouble and just introduce them to Muay Thai, where now they've been at it in the program for so long that they now are at the point where they're going to compete. So it's pretty cool that they were once just taken off, you know, out of the street to avoid, you know, trouble and everything. Now they're actually good enough to compete. So it's pretty cool that the program got them to that point. The shout to David at Los Angeles Muay Thai and Marcy for getting them up to speed out there. That's pretty cool.
That's badass, man. I'd love to actually follow up on that and see,
yeah,
you know, what's going on, because there's a lot of hidden gems in terms of like people and athletes and some
just
of these underserved,
give them a chance,
yeah, and these underserved communities. That's badass, man.
So yeah, we try and do a lot of stuff. I do some stuff here. I volunteer at Combine Arms. It's for a lot of guys coming back from military service that are needing jobs or needing therapy or needing stuff for their family, and we do a Muay Thai class there. Yeah,
man. So you're giving back.
Oh yeah, got to.
Well, let's talk about the state of Muay Thai, and let's start maybe like 4 years ago. What it looked like before you took, and what are we at? Where are we at now? Like, have you seen some substantial growth? Is there still a lot of room for improvement?
Yeah, always room for improvement. I got a lot of improvement. Yeah, we just we're getting to the we didn't have memberships. We didn't have a website. We didn't have anything, you know, 4.5 years ago, and we got a lot of that. We got a lot of that going now. We have a social media presence, and I think people are like proud of represent the USA team and wear the flag and, you know, represent. It's been pretty cool to see. The development where we getting all these youth and young adults experience internationally, and then seeing them eventually use that to catapult them into pro careers and one championship, glory kickboxing. Some of them pursue MMA after. It's just been really cool that this, you know, what we do, the USA team, giving them that platform to go compete internationally. All it does is make you better. And, you know, some of them, you know, like me, you know, they don't become a world champion. Some of these guys have come out and been really great coaches from that experience as well. So it's been really cool.
Oh, man, you hit the nail on the head again. Like, I don't know if you aware of this, but like if you look at the NBA and you look at some of the best coaches, we'll talk about like, you know, Scottie Brooks and Avery Johnson and just some other players, like they were not your typical NBA all-stars, but they were role players.
Right.
But in order for them to thrive, like they really had to wrap their mind around the game, and in turn it turned them into even better coaches, which was their true calling. So that may sound a lot like you, man. But you need to quit selling yourself short on the fighting, man. I'm sure you kicked plenty of ass.
Yeah, I did okay, but yeah, I think that's just the thing people need to understand, is that not everyone's going to be a world champion. and you can still make something out of yourself in the sport without being a world champion. Forget all these belts. Forget all the photo shoots with the phony belts, because some of these belts these days aren't even – they're not worth anything. They're – people are fighting each other down the street from each other, calling it a world title. And, you know what I mean? But you know, but it's just forget about all that stuff. You know, people aren't going to remember what color belt and all that stuff. They're going to remember you for what that fight was. You know what I mean? They're going to remember the fight. They're going to remember, you know, one of the best fights in the last 20 years is Gotti and Mickey Ward, the whole trilogy. There was no titles on the line, but you remember those fights, right? You remember good fights. Forget all those belts.
Yeah, God bless both their souls too. What plans do you have to help grow the sport and increase its popularity in the United States?
We're looking at, you know, this. We're on a little delay right now with this pandemic stuff, but we've got it now where that we're looking to do regional tournaments and work with like-minded associations like the Youth Development League and different things like that that give people opportunity, because the thing that we lack in the USA is experience compared to other countries. And so if we can get our kids more opportunities and more experience, the better they'll be when they go and compete internationally. And it's already started to happen with all the, you know, we've started to see the growth with that, is that our youth teams are doing really well, and a lot of our young professionals out there that are, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, they're already making waves on the professional circuit because of this experience that we give them in their youth. So we just have to keep creating it more here at home and developing that. And that's what we're looking to do, is getting more events and everywhere, you know, where people don't have to, you know, drive or fly, you know, so far away, because it's budget and just the time away. It's hard to go and make these big tournaments. We should have stuff more accessible for people. So that's what we're trying to do right now.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap this thing up. Where can people find info about your gym, about you?
Me, I'm Michael Chase Corley. You can, I post like once every 2 months. I'm like, I think my handle is Corley HMT. My gym is at Heritage Muay Thai. You can follow the USA Muay Thai. The Instagram is at USA Muay Thai. That's a pretty easy one to keep up with. And yeah, man, we got a lot of stuff coming up. I'm excited for when all this stuff blows over here. I think sport is going to take a big surge and blow up with this, man. I really do. I'm thinking positive here.
All right, man. Well, hey, thank you for your time. You got a beautiful spot. And until next time, we're at the Be Someone Podcast. You know, give us a listen. Come out here to Heritage Muay Thai. Come get you a membership or two or three or four.
Yes, sir.
And we'll talk to y'all later. Y'all have a blessed day.
Hello, everybody. This is Chris Ortiz again at the Be Someone Podcast. Just wanted to say thank y'all for giving the show a listen. If you could, listen, like, subscribe, share, all of the above. And if you're looking for some real good reading material, I have recently just released my book, Dear Mama, which is a children's book that goes on to thank mothers all across the world for all the life lessons and character lessons and value lessons that they instilled upon their children. So hit up Barnes & Noble, type in keyword Dear Mama, and you'll see the book pop up. And it's a children's book written by me, Chris Ortiz. Thank you for the support, and continue to listen and follow to the Be Someone Podcast. You guys take care, have a blessed day, and be that someone.